All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off, broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan, Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States and currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And today I've got Robert Porter, his friends call him Bar. And we are going to be talking about masks, reopening the state, food, bars, who doesn't love that, the VA charging vets for care, and the mass exodus of tax-paying New Yorkers. And Robert Porter is running for the New York Assembly. I guess that's the state assembly. We'll find out all about that in a second. Before we get started, of course, I just want to ask for your support. Head on over to taxationistheft.cards. Make sure you get one of our awesome hats or t-shirts or flags. We've got all kinds of really cool stuff over there. Everything you buy goes to support this channel and everything that we're doing. And what we're doing is so much bigger than just this. It's so much bigger than just the races that I'm in. We're helping to distribute counter propaganda across the country, around the world, actually. We've got people on every continent except for Antarctica sharing our information and supporting us. So thank you so much and continue that support. And now on to the show. Bar, welcome. How's it going? Oops. I turned your audio off. Okay. Bar, welcome. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So you're running for New York State Assembly. Is that right?
That's correct. The 109th Assembly District. It covers mostly Albany County, the capital of New York State.
As a libertarian, no less, that's got to be in New York. I would think that's well, I used to think that would be really hard, but come to find out, I guess North and West New York are actually very libertarian.
Well, most people think of New York City when we say New York.
Right.
And so the city, as we say, or downstate, is different than I'm living in upstate. There's a big divide between the two. Actually, the last gubernatorial election, Larry Sharp ran for governor and got over 90,000 votes, which got the Libertarian Party on the line so that we're actually on the ballot in New York State.
Right. And were those mostly votes from New York City or from upstate? How did that work out?
I'm not familiar with the complete breakdown of where all the votes came from and who voted for Larry, but he campaigned hard for 4 years and did much better than anybody anticipated, which is typical when, you know, the media downplays the third parties, ignores the third parties,
right,
locks and bans the third parties. He did very well.
Right. Yeah. And I followed that whole thing. It really was awesome. One thing I'm really interested in about this, when I went out to New York, I went to visit my friend Thomas Queter, who's running in Mount Upton. And it was he had one of his friends pick me up and drive me around because I was just up there traveling, didn't have a car or anything. And it was amazing to see how much of, like, it really is. It's almost like Texas as far as gun culture in a way. And you know, a lot of people are very much more pro-freedom out there than they are in the city. So I would think, I would hope you'd have a much easier time in Albany as a libertarian. How's that working out for you?
Well, being the capital and being one of the larger cities, it's very Democrat, very entrenched. It's when you talk to people at first, it's difficult for them to understand the concept of libertarian because they've never been exposed to it. But once you start talking to them about it, they start agreeing with you more and more on the issues. And, you know, the Democrats will actually start saying, you know, they're not really happy with the candidates and the people in office.
Right. Yeah, that is pretty typical. And I would think a lot of Democrats would even be really disappointed with their presidential pick this year. Some of them are still throwing that blind support. But yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of people do tend to be libertarian. I know Larry Sharp loves to say everyone's a libertarian. They just don't yet know it yet. So that's awesome. And, you know, I hope you do really well with this. But let's talk about some of the issues that you've got. So you're talking about masks and reopening the state. Well, first of all, let's frame this a little bit. So you're running for the state assembly, is that right?
Yes, New York State Assembly.
Okay, so that's basically the legislative side of New York's. So we're talking about state law.
State law, yes.
Right. Okay, so reopening the state and masks. Now, a lot of this, I know in a lot of other states, a lot of this stuff came just by governors, executive orders, tyrants coming in saying, this is the way it's going to be, deal with it, not really passing any laws. Is there anything, how much of this is legislative in New York?
The legislative abdicated, and they gave full carte blanche to the governor. The law that I'm familiar with concerning masks is Executive Order 202.17. And it says anybody over the age of 2 is required to wear a face covering unless there's a medical reason. And I stress the medical reason side, because being a veteran, a lot of my fellow vets have been given service dogs for their PTSD. And when they first started going to bars, restaurants, movie theaters, hotels, they were denied entry because they thought it was a pet, and pets aren't allowed.
Right.
And it took some education to get people to understand that it's not a pet. This is a working animal. It's the same as a police dog. And so the signs went from no pets to service dogs being exempt. And that's what, you know, the state should be saying. The state should be saying, if you can wear a mask, wear a mask. If you can't, for whatever reason, you don't have to wear a mask. But they've gone overboard, and they're so stuck on this idea that everybody has to wear a mask that they don't understand that some people can't. A good example is if somebody had throat cancer and they had esophagus done and they had a tracheotomy and they're now breathing through their throat and not their mouth. Where does that person wear a mask? Do they wear two masks? You know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I'd like to find somebody who has that and ask what their experience has been. Cause you know, I see a lot of people going out in public with just like either like a lacy mask or like something that's like obviously not stopping anything. I've seen like crocheted knitted masks. And to most of the people who are just like supposed to enforce these rules, they're just like, well, it's a mask, I guess that fits, so let them in. You know, they're not checking to make sure it's N95 or any of this stuff. So yeah, that is a really interesting question.
Well, you know, as I said, I served in the Marine Corps, and part of my training was how to survive in a biological environment. If the Russians or the Chinese attacked us with some type of agent, anthrax, botulism, this virus, COVID, we were taught how to survive in that environment. And at no time in 21 years was I ever handed a surgical mask and said, this is going to protect you in anything. If you look at TV shows, if you look at movies where they're portraying some type of contagion, some type of virus, and the CDC or the health officials are working in that room, that hot room, you'll see that they're in a rubber suit, giant plastic suit with pumped in air that's overpressured, so that if there's a leak, the virus doesn't get in, the air pressure pushes it out. And of course, in every movie, there's that drama where, of course, they do cut their
right, they trip on a thing and it pulls it out.
And they all go crazy. But, you know, that's the type of protection we're talking about to to have to protect you against a virus. The CDC just stated that the masks that everybody's wearing won't protect them from the smoke from the fires out in California and Oregon and on the West Coast. And there's the particles of smoke are larger than a virus. So if the mask can't protect you against a particle of smoke, it does absolutely no good against a virus. You know, but people aren't looking at this rationally and picking this apart and going, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why am I being lied to by the government?
Right. And I think it's fear. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there who are just, you know, at the very least, they're of the better safe than sorry mentality, which is like, okay, why don't you just not leave your house? And, you know, that's safer.
There are people that I've heard of that haven't left their house in 6 months.
Yeah, that's insane. But I mean, at least I guess you could give them credit for not buying into the bullshit about the masks.
Well, they bought into, you know, they've increased the stock of, you know, every antibacterial out there.
Right. Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. But so you're saying, so you said this is still an executive order, but the legislature just, did they pass a law saying that he could do this?
No, the legislators, they went home. They didn't do anything.
Handle it.
They just let the governor handle it. In fact, the governor just stated today that he's not allowing the movie theaters to reopen. And this is supposed to be a phased reopening, and movie theaters are already supposed to be reopened, but they're not. You know, we've got something like 20 states that if you go to or come from, you're going to have to self-quarantine for 14 days. You know, on top of whatever time, you know, what business, what job can afford to have a person leave for vacation for 2 weeks and then not come back to work for 2 weeks later? So they're gone for a whole month, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But when the governor leaves the state and comes back, he doesn't self-quarantine. You know, that's
oh,
really
no,
nice.
Of course. He's above the law.
Yeah. He doesn't wear a mask when he goes.
He's the ruling class. He doesn't fly on a plane with a bunch of other people either. He's probably got private jets, right?
Well, he's got a private jet, but he's got all his staff. He's got all the ground crew. I mean, he's exposed. He's more exposed than anybody else.
Right. Yeah, no, it's absolutely nuts. And that really, I think that's one of the most telling things is that, you know, they're not playing along with all these rules that they're giving us.
Especially Nancy Pelosi going to get a haircut.
Oh yeah.
You know, she was trapped into that. She was, you know, they tricked her into doing that.
Right.
So if they tricked her into doing that, I'd like to get tricked into going to the voting polls in person and casting my ballot in person. I'd like to get tricked into that.
Right. Well, so what's the voting situation like out there?
I've gotten several letters from the post office, from my senators, from the assembly, stating, you know, how to vote early, how to get an absentee ballot, how to get, you know, all these things. And I keep asking, you know, is my polling station going to be open? Can I go vote in person? Because I don't want to do this, you know, through the mail.
And any response?
They're working on it. You know, they'll let me know.
Right. They'll know the day before. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I look at this and I'm like, even if you do it in person, I think it's, they could still screw with the votes. So, you know, until they implement something that's actually like secure, like, you know, like some sort of like receipt based crypto voting or something like that. I don't know. On one hand, I'm like, yeah, I get it. They can screw with these votes. But on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, I think they're also blowing it out of proportions because they're, you know, they want to use this as an opportunity to, you know, accuse the other side of something, just like with the IDs, right? The voter IDs, like they use that as a polarizing issue. Whether or not you use an ID doesn't really change a whole lot. But, you know, the left and the right are going to say, oh, the left wants this and the right wants this. And, you know, that's why you should vote for left, because we're going to solve this problem this way. You know, that's I don't know. I see it as another issue that's not as big as they make it seem, but they're using it to control and divide us.
Well, you know, I was in Iraq during one of the elections, and I saw the Iraqis with their government IDs going into the polling stations, casting their ballot, and using their thumbprint as proof that they were who they were, on top of having the ID. Computerized thumbprint scanners are everywhere. You get your thumbprint when you do your driver's license at the Department of Motor Vehicles. So you have a valid driver's license or a valid ID card. New York State and California are giving them to everybody. So what's the point? What's the reason of saying that they can't have one? Because they can't afford it? They're giving them away free.
Right. Well, I think, I don't know. There's a few different issues with that. I know some people actually say, yeah, it's because poor people can't afford them. And then there was like this somebody did a great video where they went out there and you know,
yeah,
they couldn't find a single person that was too poor to afford one.
Yeah, they were in New York City. They did that.
Right. But at the same time, it's, I mean, right now I'm registered to vote in both California and Texas.
Right.
So it's like, you know, even if you have IDs, that doesn't solve the problem. I actually saw there was a movie. It was the movie about Nelson Mandela, the one that they made like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago. And they showed the election, and what they did was they didn't do a thumbprint scan, but they did like when you voted, you had to like mark your finger. I guess they, I don't remember if they, it was like
on a big tablet, you had to put your thumbprint on it.
And yes. So now, and then you had the ink on your thumb. So if you tried to go vote again, it would be like, no, you've got ink on your finger.
Exactly.
Now, of course,
that was that was the way they had it in Iraq. You could see everybody who voted because they had a purple thumb.
Exactly. So, and I'm sure there's like all kinds of chemicals now that you could pour on that to clean it off. But it's like, you know, okay, so that still doesn't establish citizenship. That still, you know, all these other things. And it's like, we have to stop looking at elections as if like we're going to be able to like create some absolute finite, perfect way of collecting these votes, when in the grand scheme of things, none of this really matters, because the people that we're voting for, we're giving them the authority to do things that are illegal. And if we take that away from them, then it really just doesn't matter. It's like, I don't remember who said it. I think it was Jefferson or something. I said the president should have so little power, it doesn't matter who's elected.
Right.
And if we have that philosophy, then it also doesn't really matter who votes. You know, not to say that our voices don't matter, but we should, you know, we shouldn't put all of our faith into a system. We should, of course, we can always vote with our dollars, right? We can vote with our feet. I think that's probably a more accurate way to get what you want, instead of just handing, you know, just let the politicians.
We're seeing that in New York. We're seeing that in California. You have an exodus of people leaving both states. Here in New York, the governor first attributed it to the cold weather, the climate. He said, you know, people don't like the climate, so they're going to warmer states. And, you know, now that people are actually leaving New York City, the very wealthy are leaving New York City. I don't know if he was joking or not, but he made the offer to buy him a drink if they came back, you know. But if it's at a bar now, that bar better serve food, because if you don't serve food, you can't be a bar, you can't be an establishment anymore, because that's the new executive order from the governor. You got to serve food, and he claims that chicken wings aren't food.
That bastard.
I know. So Buffalo Wild Bills is out of business.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. And do they, I mean, like when you have to serve food, is there like a, like in Texas, they have a 51% thing, right? Where if more than 51% of your revenue comes from alcohol, then you're considered a bar, not a restaurant. Is there anything in place like that? Or do you just have to have like hot dogs on the menu and that's enough to get you by?
I'm not sure what it is exactly that has to be on the menu. If there has to be more than one thing, I joked, you know, put you know, whatever you want on a menu and price it to an extent that nobody can afford.
Right. Yeah, we have food.
We have food. We're complying with the order, you know.
Yeah, no, that is a great idea.
Buy a tin of caviar, put it in the refrigerator, and tell everybody it's $1,000 a freaking cracker.
Right. It's absolutely nuts. But this is all this stuff we're talking about. This is the black market of prohibition. This is exactly like whenever the government comes up with stupid rules that nobody wants to follow. These are the easy ways around it. And
But in New York City, the police are going around and they are looking at restaurants or going in undercover and they're taking away the liquor licenses of businesses because a person ordered a drink, ordered their food, finished their food, and ordered a second drink. When they came and took the first glass, they took the empty plate, and now the person's sitting there without any food in front of them, and the business is being shut down because the governor's claiming that they didn't serve that person food.
Wow. And I could imagine that that's not even the law. That's just a misrepresentation of the facts that happened.
It's the executive order. Again, the governor said that every bar has to serve food. And, you know, so now you have to, if you have food, have a drink, don't let them take that empty plate away, because then they'll say you never had any food, and they'll take the liquor license away from a bar.
That's ridiculous. But that's the thing. That's a lying cop, right? That's a cop who's lying and saying I never had food when he actually did have food, and then he's getting
they're not the cop isn't the one doing it. He's just walking in and seeing a person with a drink and no food.
Oh, I see. So he sees somebody getting just a drink and he thinks they're not ordering food.
Right. So you have to keep that empty plate that you had food on in front of you the whole time you're in that bar so that they believe that you actually had food at one time.
So if I was a restaurant, I would serve with every drink you get a free plate of crumbs.
Shh, don't tell anybody that.
I mean, problem solved, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's absolute nuts. But yeah, so you're talking about people leaving New York, and it's interesting that you're saying rich people are leaving New York too. Is this a permanent move?
It's, unless things change. I just saw on the local business that downtown Albany, where, you know, you expect a lot of businesses to be, they're now seeing vacancies. There's now empty buildings because nobody's moving into them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I mean, I don't know, this is something that I like to talk about this kind of thing where, you know, we have this perception that everything is always supposed to be growing. Like we have this with real estate prices, right? Like, oh, real estate's always good. It's always going to be increasing. The stock market is always going to be increasing. And it's like, no, there's like, you know, whatever goes up must come down. There are going to be fluctuations in all kinds of things. And it's weird that, I don't want to say all businesses are based on this information, misinformation, but a lot of people do kind of like base their lives on the fact that, you know, oh yeah, always buy real estate because it's always going to go up. And it's like, well, what happens if you don't have a renter to go into your commercial building? Or what happens if you know, you don't, what if you own the commercial building and you own the business in it and there's nobody, like everybody leaves that town? And, you know, it's an interesting problem. You can't all, like, nobody knows the future. There are ghost towns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's I don't know, that's kind of interesting to me, but that's something I don't know, I hear about that and I'm like, okay, yeah, but you should expect this to happen every once in a while. But it's interesting that it's New York, because New York, I mean, you look at the cost of living or you look at the price of anything, right? I, like when I was in New York, I think like I sat down to have a beer and it was almost $20. In New York City.
That's New York City.
Yeah.
That's New York City.
And, but it's like the reason everything is so expensive is because there are so many people trying to cram into that little space.
Yep.
And so it's really fascinating that they're finally done with that and they're leaving. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles and I left because, I mean, that was one of the reasons. Many reasons. It was too crowded. It was too expensive. It seemed like a total waste of money. So it's interesting that it's kind of interesting that it's happening, but it's also at the same time, when I was leaving, there were five times as many people coming in.
Well, New York State actually has gone from the third most populous state to the fourth.
Oh, wow.
Florida and New York flip-flopped. Florida had been four. They're now three, and we're four. So it is a big move. There's a lot of people leaving.
Wow. Yeah, and I saw that thing, too, where there were lines around the U-Haul place, people trying to get their trucks.
You can't get a U-Haul.
Yeah, wow. I mean, are people abandoning their stuff and just leaving?
No, because there's a lot of money invested in all of those things.
Right.
So, you know, but they do leave a few things behind. Everybody, you know, leaves some trash behind that has to be thrown away. But, you know, it's you see it, you know, with the COVID, with this virus, you know, Albany's got a lot of colleges and it was a ghost town when the colleges all got shut down. And a lot of the housing on my street has renters, and a lot of them are college students. And I can say right now that they're not all rented. There aren't as many college students back, you know, because they're not sure what's going on, or they're decided to go to do everything online.
Yeah, that's another interesting one too. I mean, like I'm living in a world where all of my work is online, and I've been like that for several years now. And you know, I think it's only a matter of time before big universities become mostly obsolete.
Yeah, the brick and mortar.
Yeah, it's because there's really, maybe not obsolete, but maybe only reserved for certain specific studies. Like, you know, obviously if you're a med student, you can't do all that stuff at home, or you know, playing with particle accelerators and that sort of thing. But I don't know, that is really interesting, and that's another thing that could change, because there are a lot of people who invested a lot of money in owning buildings that they could rent as dorms around the schools, apartments and things like that. And those are, you know, what happens if, you know,
here's a good one. What happens to college football?
I'm not much of a football fan, but I can imagine.
I'm not either, but that's, you know, if the only people going to class are medical students and, you know, engineers, how to learn how to use a particle accelerator.
Yeah, they're not going to be playing football.
They're not big football players, you know.
Right.
They might play a little beer pong, but that's about it.
Yeah, no, that's a good, although I guess you could separate it wouldn't really be college football, but it would be like, you know, I guess like the semi-pro kind of thing. They'd have to start a new league not college
related. But who's going to pay for it? Because most college football is paid for by alumni. You know?
Well, I mean, if they're doing everything else online, maybe it's going to turn into like a virtual football team thing where, like, you know, they're going to have their own teams and sponsor them or something like that. Who knows? That's
Madden football.
Yeah. What do they call it? Fantasy football.
Yeah,
I don't know. That could be really interesting. But I mean, we're already starting to see like the what I thought this was a joke when I saw this. When baseball opened back up and they had like all these like cardboard cutouts in the stadium as fans. Yep. That was nuts. I seriously thought that was a joke. And then I learned it was real and I'm like, oh wow.
Yep. Yeah, but they're changing. They're you know, depending on the stadium and everything else, the social distancing, they're allowing a certain number of spectators to go into the stadiums. But none of them are going to make any money because
beer sales. That's where all their money came from.
Well, I mean, beer sales, yeah. But, you know, the ticket sales, the merchandise, I mean, all of these things go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know, like, you know, the Super Bowl, they make probably hundreds of millions in advertising alone, but that's still only a fraction of it. Yeah, it's absolutely all these other things that you can't sell. So that's going to be interesting. So what about the VA? You're saying the VA is charging vets, and is that not normal? Was it always supposed to be free and not like copay or something like that?
Well, I'll give you my example. I served 21 years, and I'm 60% service connected through the VA. So I have several issues: hypertension, tinnitus, arthritis, curvature of the spine, some other problems. And my care, since I'm service connected, had been free at the Veterans Hospital that's local to me. If I went to a civilian hospital, Albany Medical Center, I would have to do a copay there because it's not the Veterans Administration. And I was getting letters from the VA every year after Obamacare passed stating that my Veterans Administration, the VA hospital, met all the standards of Obamacare. And I just got a letter from the VA saying that I am in what category, and I served before 2018, and I now have to pay $12.50 a month for my care. And reading it, I can't tell if that's to still use the VA, or is that if I was to go to a civilian hospital on top of my copay. I haven't had a chance to call and figure this out, but when I'd read about it in a veterans magazine, the way I read it, this was going to be something that was enacted in people joining now and going forward. But if you look at what the VA was when it was first started after World War II, the care was better, the cost was nothing, dental was included, and slowly but surely they've been chipping away at the benefit, the services that the VA provides. And I don't say benefits, I don't want to say free care. Veteran earns this. Veteran serves for a period of time. This is something that was guaranteed to them when they signed that contract. If a person's wounded or injured while they're serving, then they get that care. Tom Cruise did the movie Born on the 4th of July, and it depicted the care that our veterans were getting during the Vietnam era. And it was horrible. It's improved. It still has a long way to go. But, you know, eventually they're gonna take it away completely. Right now, a person signs in the military, they sign a contract, they serve 20 years, and they're gonna get, they think, 50% of their pay when they retire. And that's been cut. It's been dropped down. Now they're being enticed, they're being told to go into a 401k type program where they pay into it and they'll get so much out when they retire. These are all things that are changing. And, you know, the veterans aren't voting for this. The military's not voting for this. The government's doing this because they want to pay somebody in one place and they're taking the money from another.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel for the situation, but at the same time, this is evidence of, one, that the government doesn't really care about us. Two, the government's always willing to lie to us and make us all kinds of promises and never deliver. But I think this is, you know, there's so many different facets to this. So for one, it's, you know, understanding that the VA is not that great of care. It would be better to get the care elsewhere. Of course, then it comes with a big expense. But the big expense is usually a big expense because the government regulations that prevent all these innovations and competition to give us less expensive healthcare.
The whole thing about the VA being expensive is the fact that we're just talking, a college is brick and mortar.
Right.
Is it going to be able to stay brick and mortar because of the way things are going? The Veterans Administration is expensive because it's brick and mortar. It would be less expensive to sell the buildings to a hospital, a civilian hospital, which then has to work in the market to provide care and give the veteran a card that says, here's your care. And you're going to get better care and you're going to get, it's going to cost less.
That's interesting. That's really an interesting question. Are the staff at the VA paid more or less than the staff at private hospitals for like the same type of job?
Well, I mean, it's the government, so they're going to be a GS rating. So they're going to be paid, you know, depending on who you ask, they're going to be paid more or less than the going rate. The advantage that they have is if you're in New York and you want to go to Texas in the VA system, you just find a hospital that in Texas that needs your specialty and you can switch. Whereas a civilian hospital, you know, you go out
of. You got to go apply and go through the whole process.
Right. So it's, you know, that's the one side of the VA. But, you know, the expensive side is all of that administration, all that paperwork behind the scenes. I go to my local my local VA, and I have residents there from Albany Medical Center, a civilian hospital, learning how to practice on veterans. It's a great hospital. They're great medical students. It provides us with better care. So if they're doing that, let's take the middleman out. Get rid of the veterans hospital. Give me a card and let me go straight to the Albany Medical Center.
Right. Because at the end of the day, and I don't like the government spending money on anything, but this is, you know, this is one of the obligations. And of course, this is one of the things where they've done a lot of damage and they owe people. But if you're going to pay for it anyways, at least if you have the option to go somewhere else and decide where that, I mean, it's kind of like the school choice thing, right? Like you're already paying the taxes. Why not let you spend that on whatever school you like instead of being forced to go to the public school?
Right.
The only question that would be interesting is whether or not that would be an increase or decrease on the government's expense based on like would the private hospitals start charging more or something like that. Now at the same time, you get rid of all the regulations that they have that are restricting the numbers of doctors that we have, restricting the certificate of need, they're restricting the ability for them to create new hospitals, all these sorts of things that bring the prices down, and then of course that won't even be a question. So it really is just like this. It's the ball of nuts, right? Which one do you undo first? And it's like, we got to start hacking away at this thing because that's the way they work. They're going to say, oh, we have this problem. Let's fix it in another way. And then they create another program and another tax and another expense and all this other nonsense. And we just get, you know, the ball of nuts gets bigger.
Yeah.
It's a difficult situation. I'm just reading some of the comments over here. Juicy G says, my father was detained for months for doing dental work without a license. Then we got reported. You guys helped me understand human rights and value. Thank you. That's insane, right? I mean, because here's the thing. Most people will say, oh, well, he was practicing dentistry without a license. Oh, he's an evil person. He shouldn't have been doing that. But if nobody ever complained about the quality of service, maybe he went to dental school, or maybe he came from another country where he
another country
license.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like it would be so much better to just have Yelp reviews, which if you look at a lot of doctors, they usually don't have that. So just the fact that they have a license, you're going based on the government's word instead of what your friends and family and neighbors are saying. I would much rather go with somebody who's unlicensed.
We can go back to college. Rate My Professor.
Yeah.
It's an app. You can rate the professors. You can say how good they are, how bad they are, if they grade tough, if they, you know, teach well. I mean, a whole slew of different ways of rating the person. But as far as, like you said, a doctor or a dentist, the only time you really know that they've been bad is that they've had a malpractice lawsuit. That's from 0 to 100.
Right.
You know, what happened in between? How many times did something go wrong in between that malpractice lawsuit?
Yeah, absolutely. But ultimately, it should be our choice too, right? So like, to anybody who says, oh, I would never, like, that's wrong, they shouldn't have gone to an unlicensed doctor. Well, okay, fine. You don't have to go to an unlicensed doctor. But to somebody who does want to, shouldn't they have the choice? What right do you have to tell them they can't? I mean, when I was a kid, my dad used to pull my teeth out with Larry. He would joke around about, like, oh, yeah, you got a loose tooth. We're going to tie it to a doorknob and slam the door shut.
Oh, yeah.
That's do-it-yourself dentistry. I mean, he wasn't filling in cavities or anything.
If you've got the money, the rich, they go to other countries and they get procedures done by doctors that aren't certified in the United States. And then they come back to the United States and they get seen by a doctor here that's certified here, you know, for their follow-up treatment. Why can't you make that choice?
There's a whole lot of that down here in Mexico. Absolutely.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people go across the border in San Diego too.
And it's funny because it's like, okay, you know, you could argue, okay, yeah, but they're certified in Mexico, but yeah, it's a completely different certification. So you have a patient from the United States and a doctor in Mexico. If the patient goes to Mexico, then everything's fine and goes back to the U.S., everything's fine, nobody gets arrested. But if the doctor goes to the U.S. and does the exact same thing and then goes back to Mexico, now there's a problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's absolute nonsense. I know, like, to me, anything that has to do with location, because I live in a virtual world, right? Like, I telecommute to everything. So, but like with that type of mentality, it's like all of this is nonsense. Borders, and these limitations and controls are absolutely irrelevant.
The relevance, unfortunately, is if the two countries don't agree, if two countries are antagonistic and are in a competition, then there is a border. But if the countries agree on everything, then, you know, why is there a border? And that's why we saw, you know, Europe become the EU. Countries decided that these borders were useless, and they started to work together and take down these borders, take down these walls, take down these barriers so that they could work together better. It's going to happen, you know?
Right. Well, and that's what happened with the US too. And what I think is really interesting about that is, like, before, like, so when the US first started, it was more like the EU, right? It was a federation of states, right? We talk about federalists and like that, like it was a federation. It wasn't a country. And then over time, of course, it evolved into a country. And I know the EU is kind of doing the same thing, but it's a lot further behind. But if it were still a federation today, like, what would stop Canada and Mexico from joining and saying, hey, we want to be a part of that. We want to have open borders and free trade and everything. And we want your First Amendment and Second Amendment. Those are all great ideas. We want to enter into your union. That would be totally acceptable. But it's the fact that the federal government now is so big and powerful that no new state or no new country, and even Hawaii, Alaska was purchased, but Hawaii didn't really want that. That wasn't like, oh yeah, let's go join the United States. They were kind of resistant.
Yep.
So I think like that was kind of that was, I guess, the last state to join, and that was because, you know, it's like nobody wants to join after that because it's like, no, the U.S. is not a federation
anymore. The thing is I think that some of the territories would like to join. I just saw a show on Guam. Mm-hmm. A lot of our military that's in Okinawa, Japan is moving to Guam. And if you ever see the video of the Armed Forces Services Committee and the senator talking about Guam tipping over because all these troops get put on, that's, oh my God, that's insane. But if you were actually to poll the people in Guam, would they rather stay a territory? Would they rather be free, or would they rather be a state? I think most of them would say that they would want to be a state. And I think the problem is the federal government. You have another state being thrown into the mix, and that's going to change the demographics of how many Republicans and how many Democrats and everything else. And nobody wants to get that mix thrown in there, because,
and God forbid, they're going to have to remake the flag.
Well, I think they're happy with the status quo. You know, that, I mean, I don't think the District of Columbia is ever going to become anything other than what it is.
Right. Yeah, no, that is really interesting. And I know Puerto Rico's kind of in the same boat, because I guess they've been pretty outspoken about voting rights, and I guess they're paying taxes, but they don't get to vote.
Well, they vote in the elections for president. What it is they didn't have any representation in the Senate and the House. They weren't, those representatives cannot vote. They're there. They can discuss the issues, but they don't get to vote on the issues. So if it pertains to them, you know, if it's a federal law gets passed, something federal, and it pertains to Puerto Rico, they don't get to say yes or no on it. It just, they get stuck with it. Same with Guam, you know.
Interesting.
The one thing that I saw on Guam, there's a maritime law that shipping between U.S. ports has to be by U.S. ships. Well, Guam being so far and so distant from the United States that there isn't really any shipping that is American that goes there unless it's directed to go there by our military or somebody like that. And so they miss out on a lot of trade because of that.
Right. And there's a, I'm looking this up. I think it's the Jones Act, right?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. So they, because I was talking to someone in Hawaii and they were telling me about this. They're, when they ship products from China to Hawaii, they have to go from China all the way past Hawaii to Los Angeles and then repack them on another ship and go back. And because of that, it's extremely expensive. And what's even, and this one makes me irate, because this is like in a situation of emergency. When they had hurricanes in Puerto Rico, I think they were trying to get water there, like bottled water, like for survival. And they were facing that same situation. They could have brought it up from, geography is terrible. I want to say Haiti or something like that.
Right. That's the same area. Yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted to just import the water, but it was the same thing. They had to ship the water all the way around just to play. It's like the, you know, three card Monty, the shell game. Like, it's nonsense. It's just bureaucratical bullshit. When people's lives are at stake.
The thing is the bureaucrats get one person telling them, we have this problem. And they go to figure out what the problem is. And their scope of everything else outside of that narrow problem isn't included. And so they solve the one problem. And unfortunately, it creates more problems.
Right.
Which then keeps them in business, because then they have to solve more problems.
Right.
Like you said before, we'll fix it. We just got to fix this first. Then we'll get to that. And then we'll fix, you know, what went wrong there.
Right. Awesome. All right. Well, Bar, it's been awesome. We're at the end of the show, but I want to give you an opportunity, you know, to ask for support for your campaign, whether you have a website, you need donations, volunteer support.
Well, one of the things actually is I don't want to take your money to get elected to spend more of your money. Keep your money. If I get elected, I'm going to try and get more of your money back to you. I'm going to try, as you said, you know, taxation is theft. Try and get less taxes for people, cut down the government. It's the 109th Assembly District. You can find me on Twitter, which we did. That's how we met. And it's 4_Porter. The last time I ran against the incumbent, I got 25% of the vote. So my campaign slogan is plus one. Everybody that voted for me brings one more person, and we're going to be there. Since my nickname is Barr, all my friends call me Barr. Another libertarian said, gave me another campaign slogan, raise the bar.
Nice.
Right. And, so it's possible. It's just people have to get to hear about my message, and the local media, the local newspaper, the local channels, news channels, they don't cover me. They actually wrote an article on another politician who was in office, put my name in the article, and never called me for a comment, never called me for a statement, and said that it's my job to call them. And I'm like, well, I'm clairvoyant. I'm going to know when you write an article.
Right.
And finally, I don't want to be a politician. People ask me why I want to run for office if I hate politicians. And I look at it this way. I served in the Marine Corps for 21 years. I put the country before myself, before my family. So I want to be like our founding fathers. I want to be a statesman. I want to put the state in front of me and help New Yorkers.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was an awesome conversation. I know I learned a few things. Hopefully everybody else watching or listening learned a few things also. Of course, I want to ask again for your support with this podcast. Please make sure to subscribe, share it with your friends, like, comment, do all that fun stuff on social media. We are on YouTube and Facebook live with video, and we are also on all of the places where podcasts are found. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast there. And we are going heavy with this show. We've got 5 shows booked every week, every day, for the next few weeks at least, because we have an election coming up in November, and we have a lot of libertarian candidates that I want you to get to hear from. We usually don't run this many shows this close together, but there really are a lot of amazing candidates out there worth listening to. So that's why we have them on the show, because as you just heard, the mainstream media does not like to pick up on us too much, but we really do have much better solutions than what the other guys are offering. So make sure to listen. Let's smash that two-party system, and I'll catch you next time. Taxation is theft. See you around.